Oh, dear God. Hi, everyone. This is Dean Haglund from the sub-offices of Rational Exuberance.
Sub-offices? It's post-production offices.
In the shadow of the Monk Griffith Observatory here in the heart of Los Angeles. This is your Chilpec Hollywood Hour. I'm Dean Haglund, and that other voice is your forever co-host, Mr. Phil Lerner.
I'm their forever co-host,
yes.
Not yours.
Not mine.
Because quite frankly, forever, their forever is longer than your forever, because you sound like you're on death's doorstep, sir.
I have a wee bit of a throat infection. Nothing more than a little lovely chlorospectic spray.
They're not sponsoring the show, so why?
Well, I didn't say the brand.
Why the product? Yeah, you did.
Chlorospectic is the brand name?
Yeah.
I thought Vicks was the brand name. Now I sponsored them.
Yeah, oh my God, we got a funny email from Will Stroh, who we mentioned last week, as the guy who finally inspired me to update the really simple syndication feed.
Oh yeah.
And actually, over the past few weeks, we've gotten a few emails like this where people have taken quite. It's touching how serious people have taken some of the things that we've said.
Aww.
So he wrote suggesting ways for us to create revenue stream. For this show.
One of them?
It did involve charging for this show, and that's something we'll never do.
No,
this show will always
be
free.
We hardly put any effort into it. Why should we then get paid for it?
Wow, that's actually not true. We just had a long production meeting off air about how we're going to be able to record shows while we're gone.
That's true. We did. That was very long.
By the way, and now here's a production meeting on air.
Let's talk.
It's occurred to me from time to time over the past year or so, really,
yeah,
that maybe we need a new theme song. And maybe it should be a theme song that is commissioned directly for Chilpec Hollywood Hour.
Hey.
For your Chilpec Hollywood Hour. Have we even mentioned that this is your Chilpec Hollywood Hour?
I said it.
Okay. Yeah. So
in my mind.
Maybe we need that. When I say commissioned, I mean we won't pay anything.
Right.
Yeah.
A freebie.
We need a freebie.
That will be heard by legions of people around the world.
They can charge us, whoever does the song, the same that we charge people for listening to the show.
That's right.
Yeah. So
send an invoice with zero on it.
But maybe it should be a contest, because we do have so many talented people who listen to the show.
God.
But I've brought this up.
Because?
I think the cat's out of the bag that our theme song is public domain.
Very public domain.
Right. It's and I may have mentioned before, I know I have it, within at some point in the last couple of years, that while having a baseball game on in the background while editing The Truth Is Out There, I think it was a Philadelphia Phillies game, some company that makes industrial sausages, which is altogether too appropriate.
Right.
So in other words, the song is being used pretty much for the same purpose. And you don't want to know how your Chilpec Hollywood Hour is made. Anyway, Robbie Consing, loyal listener of the show and a guest, he posted something to my wall.
Oh.
And it was a YouTube video of a motorcyclist wiping out after slamming into a wild turkey on the road.
Who would film that?
The person behind him. They were doing, like, racing road footage.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, and a wild turkey wandered onto the road. And anyway, the theme song to which this crash, this turkey slam was set, was none other than the theme song to your Chilpec Hollywood Hour. So
now this image is burnt in your mind.
Yeah, so maybe we need a new one. And for anyone who is out there listening, and I'm talking to you, maybe John Lawler and the B-Film extras.
Look at you.
You know, somewhere in that range between the theme to It's Gary Shandling's Show.
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
Yes.
The very generic, this is the theme to Gary's show. The theme to Gary's show. This is the theme that you hear while you watch the credits. Okay, so that, somewhere between that and Chris Isaak's very moody Mr. Kilbourne for the Late Late Show with Craig Kilbourne. Late Late Show is starting now.
Stop right here. You're telling me you want somebody to do a free theme song, and now you're making requests.
Yeah, because we want it to be generic. We kind of want it to just be sort of a, not generic, I mean, specifically generic. It should be a behind the scenes kind of, but whatever.
It should be instrumental, no?
I don't know. Should it? Well, it will be instrumental to every installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. So you're saying that it should be both instrumental and a vocal version. The vocal version at the top, the instrumental at the end, or vice versa.
So I'd like the theme for MASH. There's the movie version and then the TV version.
Oh my God. Greatest thing I've ever heard was shopping at Nordstrom's and the tuxedoed piano player playing Suicide Is Painless from MASH. I kid you not.
Oh my God. I can't shop here anymore. I'm too depressed. Oh, dear Lord.
Wow, what an opening.
That's a great opening.
Right off the top.
Why? How can we make the show better from here? It's easy.
Explain to me how you got sick. What is going on? You're pulling out your phone?
I'm turning my phone off.
Oh, okay.
Because it's phone off time.
Now, you
were
in Winnipeg, yes.
Yes.
Talk to me about that. Why were you there?
Fantastic time. I was hosting and roasting my dear old father for his 80th birthday. It was the 80th birthday Sven Hägglund celebrity roast. You see, he was a Toastmaster, and he loved Toastmasters, for those who don't know, is a speech-making organization, and he was a high-ranking member who went on many humor speech contests and used to love the roasts that they would do amongst themselves. So he specifically asked to have a roast for his birthday so that he, too, could then unleash after 80 years of pent-up steam, railing against his kids and all his friends. However, it turns out not a lot of people know what a roast is. And in fact, me and one other guy on the DS were about it. Everyone else just said, hey, what a great guy, and told some stories and had some funny pictures. But nobody really got into the Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra aspect of it, other than me. And I wrote some great jokes. One I think I should put on Twitter that actually I came up with you might enjoy. So watch for my Twitter feed.
Really? You're not even going to hit us with any jokes right now?
Well, how about this one? We're in the small town of Oakbank, and next to it's Dugald. And I said, my dad went streaking at the Dugald Flower Show. I don't know what happened, but he came home with a blue ribbon for best dried arrangement. Badoom! Badow!
Get those zingers.
That's a zinger right there. So that was pretty funny.
Well,
how are you doing? Are we having an audio problem?
I'm just checking the levels because, again, we're in reverse channels from, I think, where we're supposed to be, but that's all right.
Oh, I love it anyway. But it sounds great on my end. And in my head, oh, I have no speakers. What is that sound? Did you just do that?
No. No, I did not.
Okay. Anyway, so that happened, and then there was, as is with every Hägglund family gathering, lots of drinking, laughter, food, barbecues, sitting around a porch. And what a perfect time to be in Winnipeg. I must say, they've had a very unusual year in that this spring there was a one-week cold spell that basically the frost came just as the mosquito larvae were beginning to hatch and basically wiped out an entire season of mosquitoes. So you could sit outside this summer and not be eaten alive.
Now, the mosquitoes must serve some purpose, though, for nature.
Absolutely. They are food for many a bird and sparrow. So they are worried that the birds and sparrows will be competing much harder for amount of bugs.
That's sad.
However, there will be less equine encephalitis, so the horses will have a great year. The breeding stock will be up, as well as all those who are allergic to mosquitoes things, like my dear niece, her foot will not swell as much now that there's less mosquitoes.
It won't swell as much. It's still going to swell regardless.
Well, she got bit once. She found the one mosquito still alive, and that one got her in the foot.
So that, wow.
That was my weekend.
Now, you're back, and you've...
2 days.
You've been back on set.
Yes.
For U2 TV.
U2 TV, where U2 can be on TV. U2 TV. Don't just be on TV. No, don't just watch TV. Be on TV. Yes, this is the new network that I'm helping launch. They're going to be rerunning episodes of The X-Files, and I'll be doing the interstitials, where I'll be telling hilarious little insights and giving out the fame spot topics, where then you can jump on the computer and record a 15-second video that will then air in that very same episode. The technology involved in this is highly advanced, and it will be highly entertaining when it launches. I have no idea what channel it'll be on. In fact, I just heard as I was leaving, hey, did you sign your NDA agreement? as in you're not supposed to talk about it. And I'm like, no, I haven't even seen a contract yet. I go, well, dude, you're finished. What? Yeah, that's it. You're done. And so if we don't have your NDA or your contract, I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the interesting thing about show business is often you don't sign the contract until long after the job is done.
I know. It's all on faith.
Yeah.
So, but these things, like a good group of people.
Yeah, non-disclosure agreement. Well, yeah, I wouldn't bother signing that. Certainly don't predate that.
The cat is out of the bag, unfortunately, with our highly, highly listened to podcast Twitter accounts.
In addition to talking about this, last week, you know, we were talking about your conversation with Frank Spotnitz over lunch and... you know, and what he had to say about X-Files 3.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. I was talking about this, you know, how I'm a weekly cultural correspondent on in the UK.
Yes.
Southside Broadcasting. Anyway, the Midweek Drive show. Anyway, and they asked me about this, and it was just, it was sort of funny to me how everybody took such hope from what you said. But that there's really? Probably going to be, you know, that like somehow what we discussed last week gave people hope that there is going to be a third X-Files.
The fact I think the conversation came up seems hopeful, maybe.
I guess. Yeah, though really, I got to tell you, when I heard what Frank said, I pretty much said, well, that's it. That's all she wrote.
Well, no, I mean, the Chris Carter, like we said, you have to be inspired to write.
Right. No, the good news is
the
that
door is open.
If that inspiration comes, then there's a very good reason to think not only would there be a movie, but it might actually be a really good movie.
Right. It won't be just forced at the hand.
It's not something... Exactly. It's not a contractual deal. It's not a contractual obligation. It's not being talked into it by his friends or by his co-workers or his colleagues.
It's
that it will
desired.
Have to be something that he desires to tell. So that's the good news.
That's what I think everybody was taking, Mr. Gumpy Gruss.
Oh, okay. All right.
Gumpy Gruss?
Gumpy Gruss. Boy, your enunciation is worse than your throat at this point. Now, I...
tell me your weekend.
Well, much this week revealed what a shadowy reflection upon me you are.
Wow. Is it that I am your shadow or you are my shadow?
Well, you are a shadowy reflection upon me. It would take but a nudge to make me exactly like you.
Jesus.
Because... I spent much time trying to repair my laptop PC.
On your own?
Yeah, and while doing so, watched many episodes of Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Harvey Birdman! Yay! I did see that on your Twitter. That was hooray for me. I believe I gave you that as a gift, did I not?
No, you did not, it was on your list of the top television of the first decade... of this century.
Let me hear your comments. Go ahead.
Oh, so funny. For people who aren't aware of this Harvey Birdman or of the show where we counted down our top television shows of the decade, Harvey Birdman was a short-lived Hanna-Barbera cartoon character?
Yes. In 1961, he was a... I think it ran for three seasons, 61 through 64 or something like that. And he was an action hero. Birdman! And he would, like, be a birdman that would fight evil doers. It was, you know, an early Hanna-Barbera 61, I think it was 12 cells per second kind of dealio. So they didn't put a lot of crazy effort into it. Sort of like those, what was that other one with the caveman and the blob? And I can't even think of it. You know, there was so many of those early 60 ones where they had barely any money and any production value stuck into it. And some of them were just... moving along where they would reuse backdrops like Fred Flintstone where his house would be 20 miles long, that kind of thing.
Well,
kind of money
and so in this show, he's now a lawyer.
Yeah, it's gone on.
To become a lawyer, and all the cases that he takes involve characters from other famous cartoon series of the era.
Mostly Hanna-Barbera.
So, for example, there was one with Fred Flintstone, with the Flintstones, that wonderfully tied in how many times he was hit on the head with a bowling ball.
That's right.
The very first episode, which I already knew I was hooked, was because it involved a custody battle over Johnny Quest and his best friend Haji.
All right. That's right.
And because, of course, as someone who was often mistaken in real life for Johnny Quest, As a grown man, I was mistaken as Johnny Quest. Not as the guy who did the voice for Johnny Quest. I was mistaken for the character, Johnny Quest. I am not kidding you. I have been to bars where people have said, no, that's on the house because we loved your work as Johnny Quest. So
you're very animated.
Anyway, so that was big fun.
Yeah,
the Harvey
fun.
Birdman. So how many episodes of that were there? The Harvey Birdman Attorney at Law.
I have a 2-volume set, and I think it's 2 seasons. Maybe I'm going to say as little as 24.
Okay, yeah. So I've seen about 8 episodes at this point. And by the way, it's kind of like they said when casting this. How can we please Phil Lernis the most? And so, like, the 4 leads who are in it, Gary Cole, who's one of my all-time favorite actors.
Think of that.
John Michael Higgins, who I think I talked about when we did our show of our favorite actors and character actors.
Yeah.
You've got, of course, Stephen Colbert.
As the boss. Holy smokes, what a funny character.
And how about as the prosecuting attorney that reduces everything?
Giganto.
And... And then Michael McKean.
Oh yeah, like big names in there.
And then
in LaMarche is doing other voiceover.
And Steve Landisberg playing the bailiff.
Oh yeah, isn't that
and
great?
So it's just wonderful. It's just like all actors that I love doing the voices, and it's fantastic.
And it's great comedy writing, and it mocks the cartoons you grew up with, and then they tie that into modern pop culture references. It is 15 minutes of pure joy. That I can watch over and over again, and I often do.
Now, there's so much that we need to cover in terms of what's in the news and all
Let's
of this,
that.
But we promised more details regarding our forthcoming trip to Atlanta for Dragon Con.
I thought you were going to say Atlantis. Atlanta.
Yeah. We'll be there for Dragon Con.
Yes.
You will be all over this thing. This is Dean Haglund's itinerary
I dare not speak it.
On Friday at 5:30 p.m. in the Marriott.
Already.
For an hour, X-Track welcomes back Dean Haglund and looks forward to his stories from the X-Files and Lone Gunman sets.
I never tell stories from the X-Files and Lone Gunman sets. Yeah, I start off and then...
Because you have that non-disclosure agreement.
No, I go off on tangents and people ask questions and we have a fun time.
On Saturday at 4 p.m. in the Hyatt International North, you will be doing an improv show, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer improv, with Buffy alum Claire Kramer.
Who played Gloria. Yes, one of the goddesses looking to get back to the portal. This will be the first time I've done a Buffy improv.
You cannot pronounce anything correctly right now, can you?
I had a long day. I've been up since 4 a.m., sir. And I've been in front of a teleprompter, slaving like a goat.
That's good.
Yeah.
If you speak into the microphone,
it's
this show.
Anyway, I will be playing Spike, and she will be playing her character. We'll be on stage doing it.
Now, Sunday, you could not be busier.
Really?
You, at 5:30...
A.M.?
In the International North, 5:30 p.m., International North Hyatt, again...
Yes.
The room that Dean Haglund built. How and why actors choose their roles. You're on that panel.
Who else is on that panel?
I don't know, but you're on that panel. Description. If you're writing a book, story, or a screenplay, feel free to turn your head away from the mic when you're doing that.
It's right in my mouth. Yeah.
You'll want to sit on this panel. Write the characters that actors really want to play. Okay, so that's that. And then on Sunday... 7 p.m. So you go literally from that, although you don't have to because I can intro it.
Thank you.
7 p.m. International South.
Right.
A free screening of The Truth is Out There.
Hello? How's that possible?
It's very possible, and it's going to be thrilling. And then we follow that up. That starts at 7.
Yeah.
And I guess at... They say at 10 o'clock, but really it'll be like 9:30 till 10.
Yeah.
We'll be doing a Q&A.
Q&A.
Afterwards.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of questions.
Maybe we'll record some of that and we'll play some highlights on a future show.
Really?
In fact, I might record some of these other panels that you're
Please
on.
Please do, because I know I can tell you how an actor chooses his role. In one word, money.
Oh, that's funny.
See
what you did.
Look at that.
I thought it was location.
Yeah, location.
That's the other reason you choose it, right?
That's right.
It's either you either choose it for the part, the money, or the location.
Think of this. If Jaws 4 wasn't shot in the Bahamas, you would never gotten Michael Caine.
And boy, we really would have lost out. Imagine Jaws 4 with someone else.
I can't.
In that role.
I cannot. It would not be Jaws 4.
So that's going to be a really fun week. And we have some details about our trip the following weekend.
Oh, good.
To a big 10th anniversary of the attacks, 9/11 commemorative event.
Fantastic.
In Portland, Oregon. The pilot episode of The Lone Gunman will be shown. Some never-before-seen footage that we've cut together of you revisiting or having a visit with your Lone Gunman colleagues.
Fantastic.
Bruce and Tom. No one's ever seen this footage before.
Wow.
And edited together. And you'll be showing that in between. And then in the evening, there will be a screening of The Truth Is Out There.
Look at that.
And
we are traveling around the world.
So that's a big event on 9/11, Sunday 9/11 in Portland, Oregon. All the details, the event is being sponsored by the Anomalies Network and Ground Zero Radio, and all the event details can be found at groundzeromedia.org. And of course, we'll post that on our site.
Yes, absolutely. Have we got flights and all that all set up on that?
Mine have been, yes.
But what am now, I? What the hell?
Not yet. We'll get on them about that. But I don't think the listeners need to know exactly what flight you're on.
Well, maybe I want to have them stop by and say hi as I'm on the tarmac.
Erica Fraga.
Oh, yeah.
Our dear friend, wanted to know about the September 10th Art and Comedy Show in San Francisco that you had previously announced.
Here's the thing. The Art and Comedy Show is going to be at 1000 Van Ness, and now it has to be postponed because the comedy venue upstairs has been changing in some sort of management and has been closed for the last 3 weeks. So in order to prevent any sort of crazy mishap on booking the room and dealing with new management, all that sort of thing, that show's still going to happen, but it's probably going to happen later down the road, maybe December or in the new year.
You didn't say September 10th of which year?
That's right. I meant 2013.
So because this is your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, we love hearing from you, our legion of loyal listeners.
Who?
And you can write us.
So easily.
ChilpackHollywood@yahoo.com.
How can you not forget that?
ChilpackHollywood@yahoo.com. And we got one such email that begins much like many of our
other
spam posts.
Oh, is that
to
right?
The website.
I enjoy
congratulations on a most triumphant show of informative entertainment. it's like a form letter. It is a lovely, lovely note. So I would like to read it because there, I think, are several questions in
here. Okay, let's do it.
Dear Mr. Haglund and Mr. Larinus, congratulations on a most triumphant show of informative entertainment. We should excerpt that.
That's
the blurb.
That's our
for
big
the
shout
show.
Out.
It is such a fantastic pleasure to have recently discovered your online universe.
Mm.
It is our online universe, people.
You just listened to it. Exactly. You've sucked into the gravity of
it. It's your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. It's our online universe. And it is inconceivable to me how I did not know about this before last week.
Us too.
Quite frankly, yeah, it's inconceivable to us. How could you? Where were you, Susie? What was going on in your world that you did not know? You're going to run this show through Level later, right? Because
totally.
We're having a lot of problems. Okay. I read that part. Thank you kindly for providing free podcasts of your most excellent show on iTunes for us fans of all things culturally relevant. I have subscribed and started listening to a few of your episodes, and I already feel much more informed and aware of the entertainment industry's current projects. What fun it is to listen!
What fun it is!
if it seems like I'm making fun of this email, I'm really not. It's just
you're
it brings me
enjoying.
Such joy.
You are
exactly.
enjoying.
This is me.
Email.
This is me having joy
because so many of the emails to you are, "Hey bastard, stop doing whatever you're doing." I mean, that's a lot of what you get.
Only because I answer your email.
That's right.
Then there is within that email one specifically to you.
Oh, let's hear it.
Mr. Haglund, I am a passionate fan of yours.
Yes.
From being an avid X-File for many, many all caps years.
Of course.
She was a fan before the show ever began.
That's how many years for that show to be the fan of.
I sobbed and sobbed, wait for it, and sobbed when the lone gunmen made their heroic sacrifice on the X-Files, and my heart still swells with pride when I think about you and your two noble companions. You know, Susie, if you're going to be in Portland, there is never before seen footage of him and his two noble companions being interviewed that we will be showing.
For each of us.
The Lone Gunman show was entirely too short-lived, but it still gives me great satisfaction to watch the DVDs of it because I just can't get enough of you three dreamy hunks. That's the greatest review you've ever received.
That is true.
You know, she could hate the show, but if she called you three dreamy hunks, it's the best review ever.
You know, Tom Braidwood was voted most sexiest man in science fiction in a British sci-fi magazine.
Right.
So she's and the not
French,
far off.
The French love Jerry Lewis. Thank you for being the missing piece of the puzzle of the X-Files. Without you, there would be such an empty place in my and everyone's heart.
No.
My name is Susie, but my online moniker is Wendy Wayne.
Okay.
Wendy, the friendly witch, plus Bruce Wayne.
Ah.
I am giddy to be writing to you right now. Quite frankly, Susie, I'm giddy to be reading this.
We're giddy to hear it.
Because I am so starstruck by you. And then there's a colon followed by a parenthesis. I'm going to guess that that's a sideways smiley face. I'm starting to pick up on these things.
Wow, good for you.
She's currently expecting an exciting autographed photo from you on eBay. She's quite impressed by your paintings as well, which she discovered on your website.
All for sale.
And I only recently rediscovered your website.
Oh, is that right?
DeanHaglin.com.
Do you like your
artwork?
Design?
Yeah, it looks great.
Thank
and your
you.
Artwork looks fantastic.
Awesome.
She had no idea you were such a jack-of-all-trades kind of artist.
I'm a jack of something.
We are quite the do-it-yourself guys, and we are polyhyphenates, are we not?
I've eaten a delicious meal of polyhyphenates. They're really good for my breakfast.
Oh,
does that work for you? These are jokes. I'm tired.
You spent a lot of time at that roast writing old material.
Wait till I
She cannot wait to purchase a print of Batman and Pikachu. For people who don't know, they should check out DeanHaglin.com, your superhero series.
Yes, I have a limited run of Batman Pikachu prints, 11x16, that are available for, I think, the low price of only $30. And that comes signed.
She is looking forward to purchasing a copy of Explaining Why the Lone Gunmen Were Canceled.
Oh.
That comic book is available for purchase on the website. And
myself.
Our film, The Truth Is Out There, is next on her list of things to watch.
Wow.
Anyway, we now get to the reason she writes.
Because
she wanted to inquire about the Chill Pack Hollywood Hour t-shirt you and Mr. Larenas mentioned in last week's episode. This is another case of people taking it seriously.
Right.
Not the least of which was Pliskin himself. Because for those who don't know, our dear friend Bob Pliskin... Not his real name.
Ixnay.
Who wrote an amazing review of The Truth Is Out There.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, you did. You texted me about it.
Oh, that's
you told
right.
me that. Yeah. It's really rather extraordinary on Facebook. I mean, the way he weaves... Well, you know what it reminded me of is that I should finish reading her email.
Yeah.
Anyway.
yes.
She took very seriously that conversation, as did Pliskin, because Pliskin has created so much art that we love using in different ways on Facebook.
Shots.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood. And we use them as our profile pics, Chill Pack Hollywood Hour artwork that he's created. And I said, you know, we should do one as the t-shirt.
I agree.
You know, and but we were kind of joking.
Right.
Right. And but he took it very seriously, and I got a very, very urgent note from him. Like, of course you picked that one. It's a low-res TIFF. It's like, I'm too busy to create these. I would have created them for you, you know, and all this sort of stuff. We were kind of just joking, though I now, after reading Susie's...
realize there's a market of one for a t-shirt.
I think I am going to, at the very least...
Make three. One for Susie and one for you and me.
I mean, no, more than that. I'm going to at least... Because you've designed t-shirts.
I have.
And so you know at least where to go to get these made.
We are.
And I thought, at the very least, this would be kind of a fun thing to give away as Christmas gifts.
Lovely idea.
And then, you know, I would, you know, because I'm sort of a business idiot, I would actually probably also, for listeners to the show, give them away for cost plus shipping. to people because...
You are a business idiot.
Yeah, but because people like the show and we want them proudly supporting the show.
Right. What's great about, you know, free podcasts is we got the technology already. What we don't have is silk screens and t-shirts, so that is going to cost us. But it won't be very much because we live in downtown Los Angeles in the heart of the fashion industry, and... if you want to give them away for free.
So, Susie, I am keeping your email on file, and when we figure out what we're going to do, and we will before the end of the year make up some t-shirts, we'll let you know.
That'll be awesome.
She signs off with thank you for your time and all your efforts. Please keep up the great work on your most bodacious episodes, you two. It is people like you that make the internet worthwhile. I told you, Dean Haglund, we're changing the way people listen to the internet.
And making it worthwhile.
Please know that you are being appreciated from afar by a longtime fan. You mean the world to me, Mr. Haglund, and your work on The X-Files really added meaningfully to my childhood in ways I shall always cherish. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hope you are having a tubular summer, and may peace be with you. With love and admiration, Susie.
Thank you very much, Susie. Those are very kind words. Always love to hear them. I'm all about The X-Files.
And your artwork and
my
everything.
Artwork.
I mean, that's quite...
I'm talking about the last part. I said... The last was also
quite
very kind.
The thing. Well, I just love that. I mean, you know, and this is what I was going to say that this reminds me of, and what Mr. Pliskin's, not his real name, review of the...
people can find him on Facebook as Bob Pliskin.
Bob Pliskin, yeah. This review, what I loved about it was it reminded me of something we were asked, or at least I was asked fairly regularly when we were shooting... The Truth Is Out There, and we would travel around and do a podcast live occasionally.
Right.
And people would ask me, do you do the podcast to promote your film projects, or do you make the films to promote your podcast? And what I loved about it was this idea that promotion had to be part of it.
Right.
One way or another, we had to be promoting
you
something.
You gotta do that.
And I don't think that that's the right word. But what I appreciated was that it was a question that made me pause for a minute because I had no idea where the emphasis was or whether there was an emphasis.
Right.
And really what occurs to me is that it's a weaving, that everything we were doing with The Truth Is Out There and Chilpak Hollywood Hour was truly this weaving. And it is kind of part of a larger effort to... tell stories in such a way that we are hopefully contributing to the conversation at large and maybe sometimes at our best elevating that conversation.
One would hope.
And reading Mr. Pliskin's review really reminded me of those conversations that I had with people about, you know, what is it? Is it the film or is it the podcast?
What do you do?
Exactly.
We need to pigeonhole this whole thing right now.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. Well, for the did we, like, make that so everyone could see that review?
Yeah, I mean, we put it up on,
shared about, like
yeah,
on
we
wall,
shared
right?
it on a couple of different, on a couple of different sites. So anyway, so thank you. And, you know, and everyone, we do love reading, hearing your thoughts, not only about this podcast, but about the film yourself. I mean, because anything or any questions, again, we... You know, we make this film hoping to be able to engage in conversation on any number of topics and in order to make new friends. So please let us know what you think.
And speaking of new friends, my Facebook page is coming very close to the limit of how many friends I could have. And this means that I now have to start a fan page, or what do I do? I'm seeking advice from you, Mr. Lerness, surprisingly, even though I've been on Facebook longer than you have. You would think I know the answer to this. But a fan page seems impersonal. And yet, my personal page is going to be... There will be a line I have to draw.
Right.
When people ask for friend requests, and I will be...
I don't know. What some people do is they add a second person page. They'll, like, have two pages for themselves.
The Dean Haglund page, two.
Yeah.
I see.
So maybe people can write what their suggestions are.
We would love that.
To this.
And
because let's face it, the people who listen to this show, and who are likers of the show on Facebook at facebook.com/chillpackhollywood, or to maybe a lesser degree, likers of Truth Is Out There.
Right.
But really ones that are with us every week and the people who are on the Chill Pack page, I mean, those are the people who are the most interactive with us anyway.
True enough.
So if they have suggestions about this, that would be fantastic.
And I have my Google Plus invite, so you don't have to invite me to that. But if that is the solution, I don't know. I'll have to figure it out, but I will listen to suggestions from everyone.
Now, we have a few things I want to follow up on from last week, kind of just further developments. Last week we were talking again, as we love to do, about examples of how marketing wastes money.
Yes.
It's just throwing ever more money for ever diminishing returns, and the ways that they do this make no sense. And I was actually thinking about the fact that there's no better example of this
than
Conan O'Brien.
Wow.
Remember like a year ago? It was already like a year ago where we were getting ready for his fall debut on TBS.
Yeah.
And what a big deal. We were all really eager to see what would happen, the way his time ended on The Tonight Show. And I mean, headlines every day, everywhere, all
talking about him.
You know, when we were traveling through rural Canada, we didn't know what was going on with earthquakes in the third world, but we knew we were up to the minute on what was going on with Conan O'Brien.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
It was really rather staggering.
Yes.
And let's face it, a year later, it's safe to say that every single dollar that TBS, maybe not what they're paying him because he's a talented guy.
Right.
But certainly every penny they spent marketing that show was an absolute wasted penny.
His ratings are
the word. If you look up the definition of the word plummet,
oh no,
you will find the definition of the word plummet, which is exactly what his ratings have done.
Oh no. When
you think I'm exaggerating, you might think that I'm exaggerating when I say that.
I might think you are.
How about him getting less than 900,000 viewers a night?
What?
Less than a million. I mean, he's being beaten, I read by, I think it's six shows.
Holy.
He's being beaten, of course, by Leno, who's number one. Well, Nightline is number one.
Yeah.
Then Leno with 4 million, Letterman with 3.5 million.
Right.
There's three. He's getting beaten by Daily Show with Jon Stewart, 1.5 million. The Colbert Report. And on many nights, he's being beaten by Chelsea Lately.
Oh, my gosh. But wait a sec. He's on a different time slot.
He's at 11 p.m. on TBS.
I find him sometimes at 9 p.m. Am I getting an East Coast feed?
You're getting an East Coast feed, sure.
Oh, so
but you can get all the shows on an East Coast feed. You can be watching all of them early.
But
the point is, no matter how people... Because this is not just the ratings of how many people watch them then. It's however they watch them.
Oh, right.
And, 900,000. I mean, and of course, George Lopez was the first,
accident victim.
Yeah, he was the first victim of all this because by getting moved to midnight,
he got canceled. But wait a sec. This
less than a million viewers.
That's what we get listening to our podcast. That's shocking.
Yeah, we beat Conan on... So I'm curious as to whether anybody out there, all the, Team Coco people, are they actually watching the show?
Huh.
If not, why not? Because I don't doubt that he had a lot of fans. And it's extraordinary to me, too, when you think that Leno is back at number one regularly with 4 million viewers, not the ratings that he had before he left.
Right.
He did take a hit. How he handled everything, he took a hit on that. There's no question about it. But he is number one again, 4 million. And by the way, taking a hit, have you seen what he looks like?
No.
I mean, it's like Dorian Gray just decided, you know what, have the painting take the stage for a while.
Oh, no. Really?
It is
suddenly
extraordinary what has happened to this man.
I imagine that summer aged him a lot, actually.
He's melting. But anyway, so... It's rather extraordinary that he did manage. So there is a certain built-in audience, I think, to that Tonight Show spot.
Because you're coming off a network, local news, and you leave it on.
But, of course, Leno is getting a lot more viewers than Conan did when he was hosting The Tonight Show. So,
well, because he's more comfortable. I suppose there's a senior crowd that's watching.
I guess, that came back with him.
Yeah.
That left and then came back. Before we leave the late night stuff, did you see about Letterman getting a jihadist threat?
I heard about this. With Ashton Kutcher coming on in a flak jacket to mock the whole
That's rather extraordinary. And then I guess because of that, they probably, or maybe they would have anyway, but when there was the anthrax scare at the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, the show got delayed and the bomb-sniffing dogs, and because a package with this suspicious white powder that seemed to be anthrax delayed the show one night. And, that Craig Ferguson is really good.
I like him a lot.
He's really gifted, and he's a wonderful host, and he really holds the camera and tells a story. And as he apologized to the audience in the studio for being held for so long and for the show being delayed and that they did receive this suspicious package with suspicious white powder that needed to be tested, he, of course, volunteered to perform the test that he performed regularly from 1979 to 1992.
Hilarious.
On all white powder.
Uh-huh.
But then he turned serious, and he said, of course, you know, we apologize for the delay, but my first concern had to be for my staff.
Right.
For the well-being of my staff.
Everybody in
the then room. He went on to say, and of course, by staff, I mean my penis.
Yeah.
Which is so, that's the joke you want after the anthrax scare.
That's right.
That is laughing in the face of death.
My gosh. Why didn't I say that, the roast?
It's not too late.
It's not. It'll show up on Twitter.
Just go back to everyone who was, write those emails to everyone who attended. Had such a great time. And who can forget when I said...
Who said that? Exactly.
I don't know how to make a segue for this. Really, but we're talking about television.
Okay, good.
And the final season of Entourage we've discussed, it's winding down.
Finally.
And Jeremy Piven, who a couple years ago seemed, maybe a few years ago, seemed like the world was his oyster. He was hot as a firecracker with his excellent performance, excellent work on Entourage.
Live
he was
on
getting
stage,
film roles,
Broadway
stage
shows.
Roles. Suddenly, you leave a mammoth show under cloudy circumstances, leave them high and dry and in trouble for vague and fishy circumstances.
Sushi's a killer.
And suddenly you're not appearing in movies anymore either, but thank God you've started your own production company and your first television production, I think given all the rumors about him, perhaps... poorly named Blow got picked up, and it's a reality show that he's producing, Jeremy Piven Productions, about glass blowing, the competitive world of glass blowing.
There's a competitive world of glass blowing?
And Jeremy Piven is just the man to bring that world to life in a new reality show called Blow.
Fantastic. Now, wait a sec. You're mocking this. I will actually watch this. Because this sounds like something I am curious about. Here's the first questions immediately, just from that pitch alone. Are there artists that go from kiln to kiln around the country competing? And what are they competing for? Is it best art object? Are they juried art exhibits of glass sculptures? Or is it about thickness, firmness? There's various techniques to glass blowing that may surprise you. Then, secondly... in this thing, if it's not traveling around, I suspect you go to the studios of some very eccentric glass blowers and perhaps visit them for a thing, and when they start competing, their personalities clash, maybe.
It's true that I do not know when you might actually find something interesting.
It's true, right?
But we go from something that I completely don't find interesting to something I know you won't find interesting.
Oh, fantastic.
The track and field world championships have been taking place.
Nailed it.
Okay. And I bring this up only because of upon learning at the influence television has had over the last several years. Because I think track and field, I think pretty much other than measuring things in meters now,
absolutely,
versus the 100-yard dash, probably unchanged. Maybe the athletes are more on steroids or less on steroids from
right,
year to year, but it's still, you know, men and women in shorts and tank tops running these events as they have when our, you know, fathers watched them and our grandfathers watched them and as our grandchildren will watch them. Well, Usain Bolt, the world's fastest man, world record holder, a record that will not be touched for several years, was disqualified during the current World Track and Field Championships because of a false start. And it used to be when I ran track, because I was a track athlete for many, many years.
Yes, you were.
You were given a false start.
Right, your second shot.
And then there would be a second shot, and if you had a second false start, you'd be disqualified.
I see.
A few years back, this was changed so that the field could have a false start. Someone in the field would have a false start. Then it was basically one check mark against everyone in that field. And then anyone who did it again would get disqualified automatically.
Right.
And that change was made because there were just altogether too many restarts.
Right.
Because if everyone got a false start, you could have 10 restarts and it became boring.
Right.
But this rule change of one and done was made specifically for television, because the television networks that were carrying these events thought that it slowed down the action too much.
It builds the tension.
And, exactly, and you know, I'm not a fan of track and field anymore.
Right.
But if I were, let's say, a fan, I think I would want the fastest man in the world to be on television in the race. I don't want him disqualified.
Right away.
I don't want the stars. If there is any sport that relies on star power, it's track and field.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that television managed to screw that up for the purposes of televising it.
Yeah. Wow, that's a tough call. Because, you know, to me, false starts aren't slowing. I mean, yes, okay, you think the race has started. But it's also proving that these guys are, you know, lightning quick reactions and they're apt to be infallible. And that they're not just racing giant steroid monkeys running around, you know. Like, you, it just seems to me that I'm sad. I'm just sad by this decision.
Moving from television to film, to the world of the large screen, last week I was talking about, rather joyously, about the emergence of two fantastic young actresses, Emma Stone and Jessica Chastain.
You say they're back. There we got
new stars.
Not
back, new stars.
New stars.
Emma Stone, of course, who was so good in Crazy Stupid Love, and of course the lead in The Help, and Jessica Chastain, who does an amazing supporting turn in The Help, and just blew away audiences for her work in Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life.
Yeah.
There is I was thinking about that while watching two films by another actress that we have singled out on this show, a young actress, and wondering why I'm not thrilled by the possibilities or excited by her as we were when we first saw her.
Yes.
Her Oscar-nominated turn in Winter's Bone.
Oh, yes, of course.
Jennifer Lawrence. I saw her in two films this week. I saw her in Jodie Foster's The Beaver, starring Mel Gibson. And I saw her in X-Men First Class.
Very good.
Okay, X-Men First Class, really fun movie.
You liked that, right?
I loved that Bryan Singer came back to it to produce and wrote the story. Matthew Vaughn, desperately needing to rehabilitate himself after Kick-Ass, directed it. I don't know how they got on. I don't know. But however that worked, it worked. It is probably not the equal of X-Men 2, but that's no shame because X-Men 2 is kind of one of the gold standards for comic book movies
right
now. It's, you know, considered up there certainly with the first Superman, with Spider-Man 2. Until Dark Knight, that was kind of the gold standard.
Right.
And really was disappointing, therefore, when Bryan Singer left X-Men 3 to go do Superman Returns, thereby really hurting two franchises.
Yeah, totally.
But it really came back, and doing it as a prequel and tying it in with the Cuban Missile Crisis was really fun.
Smart, yeah.
Michael Fassbender, who is amazing, is so good in this film. And an interesting counterpoint to James McAvoy, because they're really good kind of buddy chemistry.
I know, right?
James McAvoy is really wonderful as a young Patrick Stewart in it. But I'm at kind of the end of my rope with James McAvoy. I was getting there, as I said, with The Conspirator earlier in the year, where I could really start seeing James McAvoy pushing against his own limitations. And I find that so many of his choices are made by what I'm going to project onto him as the desire to be a movie star. He makes movie star decisions rather than actor decisions.
Interesting.
And that is as an interesting counterpoint to Michael Fassbender, who always makes the actor decision.
Yeah.
And as a result, oh, by the way, he's now a movie star.
Right.
From Rochester in Jane Eyre to Eric Magneto. in X-Men First Class, dude's every bit the movie star and a great actor, and I hope he continues to make the actor choices because he's exciting, and it's that kind of excitement of not knowing exactly what's going to happen because the actor is making unexpected choices.
Absolutely.
And the only disappointment I have about it is that he grows into Ian McKellen. Because there's so much of an edge to Michael Fassbender, and there isn't. Not that Ian McKellen doesn't play a good villain, but it's not the same kind of sexy, edgy, you know.
I suggest young Ian McKellen would have been edgy with interesting choices, perhaps.
Sure. I just don't think Michael Fassbender will become Ian McKellen. There's just something cool about him, innately cool at his core, that I see more like the way Clint Eastwood aged. You know?
Okay. I'll give you that.
I don't see Michael Fassbender becoming more showy and flamboyant as he gets older.
No.
Which is kind of Ian McKellen's in trade.
Yeah.
His intense theatricality.
That is true.
Jennifer Lawrence in this film, you know, I'm excited because it was so great in Winter's Bone, as we said. She gets to play a character in Jodie Foster's The Beaver, which is about depression. For people who don't remember, Mel Gibson plays a man who's suffering from suicidal depression. And there's no spoiler alert here, but as part of a therapy, he begins to speak exclusively through a hand puppet.
Right.
And Mel Gibson is fantastic in
really?
It. It is, as a depiction of depression, it's a worthwhile film. As a performance piece, you know, this movie, The Beaver, that Jodie Foster makes, is a good movie.
Right.
It's not a great movie. And the sad thing is, given who Mel Gibson is now in our popular culture, it needed to be a home run out of the park for people to overcome all that to go and see it.
Right.
Simply Good made, I think, critics be able to dismiss it, and therefore audiences dismiss it.
Damn it.
And it's really interesting because, you know, you think, man, if Mel Gibson and Jodie Foster had done this 8 years ago, this would have been a movie just on the strength of the performance that everyone would have seen. Because it's Mel Gibson in the performance of a lifetime.
Right.
And that's enough to make a lot of people go see a movie. Think Michael Douglas in Wall Street. Not a perfect movie, but the performance of a lifetime.
Absolutely, and that called out separately from the rest of the movie.
But now, Mel...
too much baggage?
Too much baggage, so we're looking for any reason to stay away from it.
Right.
And so unless it's a home run, we're going to stay away from it, and that's what people did. And it's very much a worthwhile movie. As a father-son story... about how depression is handed down through the generations. It's very interesting. And Anton Yelchin, wonderful young actor.
Great actor.
Plays Mel Gibson's son, really looks like him and really captures him. And it's a very worthwhile film. In a supporting role is Jennifer Lawrence.
Right.
And it's an interesting character as written, and she's underwhelming in it. And I found her underwhelming in the role of Mystique,
yeah. First Class. In fact, I didn't realize that was her as Mystique, because it was sort of a, you know, interesting thing, but not the way it's written was interesting. But you're right.
It's the way that it's written is interesting, and but there is something, two things about her. If you think back to her in Winter's Bone, where she was so authentic again, right? She has been scrubbed so clean now to be kind of Hollywood ingenue.
Yeah.
And that alone is not interesting. So you have to fight against that as a performer. And you know my thing that's really My fear always when an actor breaks through too young in independent films, they're going to get plucked and put in big budget films where they're really on their own.
Yeah. And they're so desperate for young ingenues and young leads that they will put this studio pressure of 1,000.
However, if anyone knows this risk, it's Jodie Foster.
I know.
Right? So what happens in a movie like The Beaver? What happens when it's a good role? It is a good role in X-Men First Class. And the word that I come to is a word that we were using earlier in this show. There's no joy in her performance in either of those things. And it's not that, you know, you say, well, but she's going through turmoil, right? She's going through turmoil. Of course there isn't joy. But that's where the magic of acting is, right? If you are playing someone who's depressed, you as an actor cannot be depressed. You have to have focused energy.
Yeah.
It doesn't translate as depression.
Right.
It translates as a bad performance.
Exactly.
That's the alchemy of acting. And
also the biggest problem, try play boredom. You cannot play boredom.
And so I think of what Joseph Campbell said about the real challenge of life is really appropriate as being sometimes the challenge of an actor, which is to joyfully participate in the sorrows of a character.
Right.
As an actor, there has to be that sense that only comes from joyously attacking something.
Right.
I remember what Marina Sirtis said about a scene in our movie Spectres that we did.
Don't name drop.
She talked about the fact that a certain scene that we did involving a bathtub, a dead girl, a syringe, you, Tucker Smallwood, and her.
Ice cubes.
Ice cubes. She said that that scene was possibly the most challenging scene of her life.
Wow.
Was it fun? No, not really.
No.
Was it rewarding? More so than anything she'd done in years.
Right.
And you could sense the joy in it. Fun and joy are not necessarily the same thing.
Right, right.
There's the joy of really delving and making use of all your resources.
And all your craft and everything you trained for and bringing this to bear on a moment. When, and that, yes, it is uncomfortable. Yes, you bring up emotions that are things that you normally don't want to go and visit.
And I see that with Emma Stone. I see that with Jessica Chastain. I see that with Michael Fassbender. I haven't seen that in these two films with Jennifer Lawrence. And it's a disappointment given what we saw again in Winter's Bone.
Damn it.
Though, you know, look, the best thing about, you know, the most important thing that you can do as a filmmaker or as a producer to get a good performance, it's to make sure you cast the right person in the first place.
Right.
She was clearly very well cast for that. Who knows? Maybe she wasn't well cast in these others.
Who knows?
Let me see. I did an interview this week with Jason Hartman, who's known for his Creating Wealth show, and I was interviewed for the Holistic Survival show. I don't think the interview's aired yet.
Right.
But it was really interesting. I found myself getting frustrated during the interview because he really wanted to pin me down on what I believed were motives behind certain things that are going on in the world.
Right.
And I found it really frustrating because, you know, we've talked about this off air more than we've ever really talked about this on air, but it's something that Lee McCloskey says in our film, The Truth Is Out There. Don't stand on the side of the river and go on and on about how evil and dark and corrupt everything is. We already know that.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and I think about this with so many issues, especially where conspiracy theories are involved, because I was on the show talking about The Truth Is Out There, that it's not enough for some people to be able to get us all to agree that this is taking place and we need to do something about this. They need to prove that they are right about what motivated the people, the group, the individuals that did this in the first place.
Right.
And I think that part of the job of elevating conversation to move us towards answers and what we're going to do about this,
right,
is if we can agree that, let's face it, our food supply is poisoning us.
Yes.
We don't have to get to the point of agreeing on whether it's the product of greed and short-sightedness, whether it's the product stupidity, i.e. cleverness of, hey, look at how we can make food cheaper, faster, or if it's part of a conspiracy to make us all fat and unhealthy.
Right.
We don't have to agree on those motives at all. We can all agree.
Food is poisonous.
The argument is over.
Yeah.
Our food supply, by and large, is poisoning us.
Right.
We need to eat healthier. We need to create a healthy food supply that is available to everyone.
So, this guy was trying to pin you down then on motive. Do you think then that there was an emotional detachment from the need to go forward? Because that takes not only some bravery, but it's also emotionally kind of overwhelming to actually go, yes, okay, all of these things are, if you give them as true, then what do you do about it?
I this is an interesting question, and we'll talk about this, and maybe people will ask us when we're out and about what the truth is out there. But I was thinking about what a country of lawyers we are. You know, we're famously a country, you know,
country
made
lawyers.
By lawyers, and we're built on the law and all this.
Right.
And there's this misconception that people have, I think, from too much television, and I think lawyers are among these, you know, that you got to prove motive.
Yeah.
Right? If you want to find, you know,
a murderer.
Conviction... You know, you've got to prove means, motive, opportunity. No, you don't. You just have to prove that they did it.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, motive can never, ever, ever be proven. Because you can't know another person's thoughts and heart. You never can.
Right.
We can theorize motive. But if we can prove what's being done, and we can prove that what's being done does not serve us... As far as the rest of us collectively are concerned, that's the end of the conversation.
That's all we need.
You know, so much time is spent about not only why, from a failure standpoint, President Obama is a failure as a president. There's so much effort spent now explaining the motives for why. Oh, he's a socialist. Oh, he's not an American.
Right.
Oh, he's a Muslim. All this ridiculous waste of time. You know, if he's bad, just build the case for why it's not working.
Right.
And find someone who will do the job better. Or if the system's broken,
which is
talk
right.
about that.
Yeah.
But the thing that we do so often when we get into that discussion of motives is we now have removed so many people who were with us up until that point.
Right.
A large group of people that could agree with us, for example, that the war in Afghanistan is not a war worth fighting, or the war in Iraq is not worth fighting. Many people could come to that conclusion. And if a majority of people came to that conclusion, wow, think of the power of that.
Something could change.
But when you need to prove that it's the wrong war because...
Blankety blank.
Then you're running the risk that you're now going to marginalize your position.
Right. Because then, by narrowing that down, you have less of a base to spring from.
You know, during this interview, the other frustration that I had was a frustration with myself, where he asked, you know, given, you know, the financial downturn again and all of this, you know, what my advice would be for people. And I spoke about this.
You were giving financial advice?
Well, kind of, in terms of our own, but just with anyone, you know, creatively.
Yes.
The holistic survival show.
Right.
And the word that I was trying to remember, because we've used it in conversation before, was the word admiration.
Right.
And, you know, the word that I think it's important for all of us to remember is admire, that, you know, our money has value. Our time has value. Our energy has value. This is all energy in one form that we are giving out to something, to someone, to the world at large. Yeah. Our time, our money, our efforts. This is all energy. And the best advice that I have is put your energy where your admiration is. If you admire something, invest in it. Be that investment an investment of time, effort, or money. I think about why, you know, with Steve Jobs stepping down, why is Apple the most valuable U.S. company? Well, I think it's got to be because it's the company that people can actually admire.
Right. That there's a product that works when you get it, and it's it seems to be intuitive, These are the functions. That's very interesting. I didn't think I'd admire Apple, but there is an admiration for the products that it makes.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah. So as an investment, you know, because here's the thing. People invest in what they think is a smart investment.
Right.
But so often those are things that they wouldn't want in their neighborhood anyway.
Right.
Tar sands. You've got to realize that where you invest, where we collectively invest, is what we're going to see more of.
Exactly.
So if you don't want Walmarts, if you don't want super Walmarts, stop investing in them.
Right.
Stop giving them your money, your time, your energy.
Exactly.
Put your time, your money, and your energy where your admiration is.
Look at that.
And you've got to believe that that's going to build the world that you want to live in, at least closest to home.
And you know what better place to put your time and energy into?
Your ChilPack Hollywood House.
That's right.
Brings us to more than an hour of
it
your
does.
ChilPack Hollywood Hour. You can find so many episodes of this show at ChilPackHollywood.com. You can download them. You can stream them. You can subscribe via iTunes.
So easy.
And please follow us on Twitter.
Yes, I'm at D. Hagland.
And I am at Phil Lernis. We'll be back next week with a pre-recorded show for Labor Day with the man who coined the phrase podcast royalty
for us
to refer to us. Although because I was such a fan of mod music and the mod father, Paul Weller, I like to think of us as the pod fathers.
Till then, I'm Dean Hagland.
Till then.
See you then.